Job losses, protests, roadblocks could be the result of fallout from a no-deal Brexit, according to a government document, as Operation Yellowhammer scenarios were published last night. I said best case a few seconds ago. It was my mistake. They're saying that that's the worst case scenario. There is some speculation as to whether that terminology has been changed in itself. We'll talk about that in a second. The document said that some cross-border trade would stop. Agri-food would be worst hit by tariffs. It predicted some firms would stop trading and that those that continued would face higher costs, which could be passed on to consumers. Meanwhile, 51% of Northern Ireland voters would back a United Ireland, according to a new poll, if there was a border poll tomorrow. The poll was conducted by the Conservative peer, Lord Ashcroft, and interviewed 1,542 adults online between August 30th and September 2nd. Let's speak to our political correspondent, Enda McClafferty. Good morning to you, Enda.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So the Yellowhammer document was leaked and the Times got it. And we saw some of the substance in it. The government have now published it in full. What are some of the highlights, Enda?
Well, Stephen, it runs to around 5 or 6 pages. And as you say, much of what we've learned overnight was already in the public domain in terms of what the Sunday Times got hold of by that leaked document earlier. Of course, it paints a pretty bleak picture of what life would be like here in a no-deal Brexit scenario. But of course, the government's going to great pains to point out that as far as it's concerned, this is the worst-case scenario. The reasonable worst-case scenario is how it puts it. But it doesn't look good, Stephen, because as you say already, you're looking at job losses, you're looking at cross-border trading coming to a stop, you're looking at the government's initial plan of having no checks or tariffs on the border, having to change within a matter of days and weeks because it would be simply unsustainable. That would create major headaches then for those, of course, who apply their businesses across the border. It also then talks about the possibility of civil disruption, talks about road blockages, talks about people taking to the street to vent their anger, also talks about big headaches for fishing as well, with the number of fishing vessels that would find themselves fishing in illegal waters, so to speak, and that could trigger some sort of protest on the high seas as well. So it does, Stephen, lay out in pretty stark terms about the stakes that are at play here if we end up in a no-deal scenario, particularly for Northern Ireland.
And yet the government will say that, look, they know that, that's a worst-case scenario, so they've been trying to mitigate against it. They've been putting preparation in place.
That's right. This document, interestingly, Stephen, was dated the 2nd of August. And you remember, of course, whenever the leak came out of the Sunday Times, a lot within the Cabinet and the DUP, in fact, that this was an outdated piece of work and that there was something more relevant coming down the pipeline. But it is pretty clear that this was a working document circulated among Cabinet ministers. We also know, for instance, that senior civil servants in Northern Ireland were involved in inputting on this particular piece of work as well. So it is relevant in terms of the government thinking. Now, what we are expecting, and we're told today that we're going to get it in a matter of days, will be the government's revised version of this particular document, the no-deal planning and the contingency plans which the government is going to put in place. Michael Gove saying that they've been working on those contingency measures over the course of the past 6 weeks. Now, you might find that because this is now fully in the public domain, has been put there by the government, their hand has been forced, of course, because of a vote at Westminster, you may find that this revised document might find its way into the public domain a little bit quicker than planned.
Yeah. Sir Geoffrey Donaldson this morning was speaking on Radio 4's Today programme and he hasn't had a chance yet to read the document in full. Here's what he told John Humphreys on Radio 4.
Well, I haven't read it in detail, but I have seen the summary of some of the material that is in there.
So it's 5 pages long. He hasn't read it in detail. I wonder when he does, will he be surprised, Enda?
Well, I wouldn't think so, Stephen, because I'm sure Geoffrey Donaldson has read already what's in the public domain, and much of it is going over the same ground, so to speak. But I don't think he will be surprised, because this information has been in circulation for some time. He will have known if he's been in touch with our civil servants here in Northern Ireland. They're thinking about where we might end up in a no-deal Brexit scenario. So I would imagine Geoffrey Donaldson and the others of the DUP are well aware of the detail in this particular document. Now, they may not have read every jot and tittle, as they say, of the paperwork paperwork that came out last night, but they will be aware of what's in it, the detail and the consequences for Northern Ireland. But they will also say, of course, Stephen, that this is a worst case scenario and that people really shouldn't read too much into it. And there is a revised document coming down the track that people perhaps should put more store in.
And one of the other interesting things about this document is there's a date on it, isn't there? The 2nd of August, I believe. Is that correct?
That's right. The 2nd of August is the date on this particular document, and that would indicate that it has been circulated, of course, quite recently around the cabinet table, and those at the time said this was an outdated piece of work. Well, but it also has to be said, Stephen, that this piece of work is based on the assumptions from the previous government, the Theresa May administration, and that's why those now under Boris Johnson's command are quickly rubbishing a lot of this and basically saying this was the bleak picture that was painted that suited Theresa May's political ends at the time, and that's where they're saying that it perhaps over-exaggerates some elements of it.
So if the date on that document was the 2nd of August, let me just remind everybody what Arlene Foster told BBC Newsline on the 18th of August, just 2 weeks later.
I think it's probably an outdated leak. It comes from a time before Boris Johnson was Prime Minister. That's the first thing to say. And secondly, it's been leaked with the idea, really, to undermine the Prime Minister before he goes out to Europe and meets European leaders this week.
An outdated leak, says Arlene Foster. Date on the document, 2nd of August. She's calling it an outdated leak just over 2 weeks later.
Yes, this was a working document around the cabinet table, Stephen, so there is no doubt that it is a current, and it was a current document whenever the details appeared in the Sunday Times.
Why did she call it outdated then?
Government was working on. Well, perhaps she was indicating that the thinking in it was outdated, Stephen, because the assumptions that, I suppose, helped to draw up this particular piece of paperwork were assumptions that were taken from the previous government. But it has to be said, we're talking about the same bunch of civil servants. The ministers and the politicians may have changed places, but the civil servants who put this together are still there. The same civil servants who, prior to August the 2nd, had come up with these ideas are still there today. So it would you know, it's safely assumed that this is still the working thinking in government, although we are being told that there's something that's going to paint a little bit of a brighter picture coming down the track. So we'll wait to see what that entails when it does emerge in the public domain.
Within this document, I'd like to draw our listeners' attention to a section I was reading within the Yellowhammer document on care homes, because we've focused a lot on care homes on this programme. And there's no doubt that it is a fragile business, care homes in Northern Ireland, and indeed throughout the UK. We know the implications for elderly people if there's not enough money in the system, if people don't get that right. And we know that only too well here in Northern Ireland. I just want to read this to people from within this Yellowhammer document. It says, there's an assumption that there will be no major change in adult social care on the day after EU exit. The adult social care market is already fragile due to declining financial viability of providers. An increase in inflation following EU exit would significantly impact adult social care providers due to increasing staff and supply costs, and may lead to provider failure, with smaller providers impacted within 2 to 3 months and larger providers 4 to 6 months after exit. So what I'm wondering here is what preparation is being done, and in particularly, obviously, I'm wondering, Enda, in Northern Ireland for care home sector here. If this document is predicting in a possible scenario that there could be stress and some failure within the system.
Well, that's a good question, Stephen, but I'm afraid I don't have the answer. But there will be those at Stormont, the senior civil servants who are in charge and tasked specifically with no deal planning, who I'm sure have given this some thought, because they would have fed into this document. They would have been looking at this particular area and assessing the impact for Northern Ireland. And I'm sure those within the Department of Health have also shared their thoughts with Whitehall in terms of how it would play out here in Northern Ireland. Now, what this document holds today, being released from the government, this is the official position the government taken. It allows then people to go and ask those pretty searching questions, Stephen, of health officials here in Northern Ireland to respond to what are pretty growing concerns about what that might mean for the care home sector in Northern Ireland if we find ourselves in this pretty difficult position.
Ruth Dudley Edwards, the commentator, joining us now. And the commentator, Ruth Dudley Edwards. Enda, thank you very much indeed. Good morning to you. Good morning to you, Ruth.
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen?
Well, there are two schools of thought here. This is a worst-case scenario, nothing to worry about because we can all trust the government to have things to mitigate it, or we've got to start to worry because some of the things in this are deeply worrying.
Well, I think we have to remember that this came out about 10 days after Johnson became Prime Minister and the whole attitude of government changed. Now, this would have been happening, this would have been being prepared at a stage when the Chancellor was being tight-fisted with money, the Chancellor was dead against any possibility of a no deal, Philip Hammond. And, well, we know Mrs May was just hell-bent on bringing back to Westminster the same old withdrawal agreement. So everything has changed in the civil service. I say this as a one-time civil servant. I worked in the Department of Industry for some years in the late 70s, and they are very much affected by what their ministers are. You know, well, I can remember having been part of preparing a document on worst case and best case, and so much depended on whether you had an optimistic minister or a pessimistic minister. And their whole attitude has changed. I mean, Michael Gove was in there 7 days a week having meetings every day about how have we solved the problems that we were told about yesterday, what are the problems we've got today, how are we going to solve them. And he's got a massive task force. I mean, a couple of my friends actually have been parachuted in, of people who are really good in emergencies, planning stuff. The fellow who's the chief executive of the Kent County Council, who was very, very down in the dumps a month or two ago about plans, was on the Today programme this morning saying, totally different now. You know, we're nearly there.
Well,
in Hackett.
Yeah, and we're going to see this latest document soon, apparently.
Mm.
But the obvious question is that if this was, and there is an if around it, because there are some people disputing the language within this document, saying that there was a previous heading that was not saying worst case scenario. It was saying base case scenario. And then some people speculating, has that then subsequently been changed to worst case scenario? But even if it is a worst case scenario document, where's the reasonable case scenario? Where's the scenario that the government does think is going to happen? We haven't seen it yet.
I think you're going to get that in a few days. But I mean, look, like you, I am in the media and we thrive on conflict. That's what we thrive on. And at the moment, nobody wants to believe there isn't much, you know, that the problem is less than it seems. Everybody's talking it up. Politicians are talking it up. Journalists are talking it up. I really think we'd better wait for the document that they produce in a few days, which reflects what they've been doing for the last month and a half, because that is going to change everything. You know, we can sit here analysing the text and saying, does this word mean that word? Everything has changed in the civil service. Everything has changed in the cabinet. It is a totally different world since Johnson came in.
Let's see what some of our listeners at home are saying this morning. Brian, morning, Brian. Hello, Brian. Well, Brian's saying very little. Peter, morning, Peter.
Just laugh at the politicians here, Stephen, all wringing their hands. Where have they been the last 2 years? I haven't worried why I got an appointment in the hospitals. They don't worry about the education. They don't worry about anything else. And then they're on the radio this morning. Oh, God, what are we going to do? So we've got 2 years. We may as well be in training the last 2 years, the worst case scenario, because nobody's done nothing for us.
Well, what do you mean? Nobody's done anything
for us. You know, if you need appointments, you can't get appointments. You can't get none because there's no government putting the money into places in the health board, the education or anything. And then they'll say they're on Michelle O'Neill's on this morning. Oh, God, what are we going to do? Why don't I just go back into government and try to do something?
Well, Michelle O'Neill would argue that they have been continuing.
On the DUP.
That they have been continuing to campaign and advise the public against Brexit. That's what Michelle O'Neill would say. And the DUP would be telling you to respect the vote of the UK-wide referendum.
Well, but then why are we waiting for the British government to bring in a couple of laws here when they should be able to get into government themselves, you know what I mean? And do it. You know, I mean, at least they have their wages to fall back on. You know, and arrests, you know, maybe if we go out of Brexit, maybe instead of waiting 5 years for an operation, we're going out of Brexit, I might get it in 3 years.
You sound angry, Peter.
Yes, because I hate the way they get on. Everything here turns to green and orange. You know, you have the Shinners on thinking, you know, we United Ireland, and then you're having the DUP and Tens, we're going to go that way. And all it is fear factor, and I don't think they realise what they're doing to people's minds here.
Brian next. You know, morning, Brian. Thank you, Peter. Morning, Brian.
Good morning, Stephen. Just I want to say this about the report, which we heard before, the part about protest. That's a big, big problem, and there will be a major problem with protests on the streets. I, for one, for instance, never went on the streets for protest. Wanted to, but never bothered. Now, if this thing goes belly up, it'll be me and the people like me who never protest before will be on the streets. If there's a no deal, for instance, and if things do get worse, even if there's a deal which doesn't satisfy everybody, but the point being that it looks like it will be a no deal, the people will be on the streets. And I said, Stephen...
Well, I see I was just reading the Belfast Telegraph this morning, I see that Simon Hamilton, of course, he was until recent times a very senior person within the DUP.
Yeah.
The Telegraph headline, "No Deal Brexit ought to be avoided at all costs," says ex-DUP Minister Hamilton. And there was a lot of speculation as to what way Simon Hamilton voted at the time in the referendum. He has said a no deal Brexit could do untold damage.
Yeah, also, Stephen, there was a meeting the other day with all businessmen who met Boris, and 100% of those people were saying, obviously, no deal. And these are the people who wanted to accept Theresa May's deal, the farmers as well. And the people will be on the streets complaining or protesting against the politicians here. We all know who I'm talking about, the DUP. Because they, if things go belly up after October or November, whatever the case may be, they will, I hope they come on your show and apologise to the people of Northern Ireland, or better still, resign. Because if there's no deal, that's what's going to happen.
Well, the DUP have been saying that they don't want a no-deal scenario. They want a deal, but they want out of the EU.
Yeah. This has gone on for 3 years, as you know better than me, but that won't even listen to the businessmen or farmers. They're totally ignoring. And when you listen to what's going to happen to the farmers, I've been listening at your show last night, you know, and John Wales, yes, he was always saying, well, that's not going to happen. You know, they won't listen to the professionals. They won't listen to these people. They're only professionals in politics. Listen to the professionals in banks and farmers and the business people here who've been in business for hundreds of years. They know better than them, but they won't listen to these people. You know, that's a big problem.
And you're not prepared to keep an open mind as to the potential upside of Brexit? The opportunity to trade around the world, the opportunity to create our own laws, the opportunity not to be harnessed by EU regulations.
Stephen, there were two people, I can't remember, on your programme last week, arguing the point about Brexit. And one was saying, this is what's going to happen. The other person said, no, it's not going to be. I don't know who to believe. And that's thousands of people like me that don't know. But listen, one side is saying, This is that, and they are saying. So obviously, one of them is telling porkies. So the people don't know. And this came through your program last night about another referendum. You know, people are more savvy to what's last 3 years of what's going to happen, what may happen. So that's why they need, because they were told lies from the very start, both sides, by the way. So they know a wee bit more, not a terrible lot, by the way. They know a bit more now.
I'm just looking here. I'm looking here at the section within the Yellowhammer document, 6-page document dated the 2nd of August. On food, for example, it says certain types of fresh food supply will decrease. Critical dependencies for the food chain, such as key ingredients, may be in shorter supply. It says these factors would not lead to overall food shortages, but, quote, will reduce the availability and choice of products and will increase price, which could impact vulnerable groups. So again, I would have a question. What are we going to do for those vulnerable groups who already find it difficult to feed themselves and their families? What are we going to do? What is the mitigation going to be? The document, and in terms of low-income groups, the document also refers to them, and it says that low-income groups, quote, will be disproportionately affected by any price rises in food and fuel.
And there's no answer, Stephen. People, it's only a matter of weeks away before the so-called deadline, and there's no answers. People, you mentioned about the home care, the care places, the care homes. You know, imagine the people, those people
living there and listening to your show today and worried of what may happen. Mm. And there's no answers from anybody.
Well, it's there within the Yellowhammer document. It's actually a section 20 of it, and it does talk about the possibility of some care home providers basically going belly up may lead to provider failure. So again, here it applies obviously this to the whole of the UK, but my interest is in Northern Ireland this morning. So what are the powers to be in Northern Ireland doing? How are they mitigating that risk? What preparation is there if there are some care home providers in Northern Ireland that may be put under so much stress because of Brexit that they go under? What's the planning around it? What is it?
All the politicians, all I worry about is Northern Ireland. All the politicians here in Northern Ireland, they don't know, and they should know. They should be pressing for answers for the people of North. The DUP, all they say, oh, fair tax. That's not good enough. That's not good enough. They should be able, after 3 years, to say, no, category, it's not going to happen, whatever the point being. It's not going to happen. But no, nobody knows, Stephen. And that's the worrying thing of everything here. And that's where, go back to Barry Stark, what I said, that's when people, well, like myself, will take to the street.
But as Ruth Dudley Edwards, Ruth, as you were saying, we can't know. We're looking into a scenario where nobody does definitely know, and maybe we shouldn't panic, Ruth.
No, do you remember the Millennium Bug, Stephen?
I do.
Endless disaster scenarios, and people were worried sick. Every computer in the land was going to break down, and it didn't. There wasn't a problem, actually, in the end. We're not soothsayers. We're not prophets. We can only make educated guesses, but we can't know. Now, I mean, the point about Boris Johnson is I don't believe he wants no deal. There are very few people who want no deal. But he regards no deal being on the table as an absolutely vital part of the negotiating tactics, and I think he's right. I mean, I'm seeing some movement in Europe because they didn't believe that no deal would ever happen under Theresa May, and they now think it's possible it could happen under Johnson, and they think it because Michael Gove is organised. I mean, he's actually a brilliant organiser. Whatever you think of Michael Gove, he's doing an extraordinary job actually on addressing all the problems that are coming up and finding solutions. And that is changing the attitudes in Brussels. They're saying, "My goodness, I think they might mean it." Now, what are we going to do? So, you know, I think it was terrible to try to take away No Deal as a negotiating technique. All it's done is induce public hysteria and argument and division and punch-ups in Westminster and so on. We are actually tying politicians down now all the time by demanding information on everything and trying to scupper things being done ways we don't want by means of information that actually we'd be better without. Tony Blair was the person who introduced the Freedom of Information Act. And Tony Blair wrote in his autobiography, "What was the worst thing I did? The worst thing I did was to introduce the Freedom of Information Act without realising how it was going to make government almost impossible to run." So I just pass this on, telling the public all sorts of things about stages in negotiations, which are delicate. I mean, how could a business operate like that? What would happen if you insisted that Tesco disclose all the documents on its negotiations with its suppliers? Couldn't operate. We really are wrecking government. And you know, people don't write the truth in documents anymore. I'm a historian. That's my trade, my primary trade. And I rely on material that was written honestly 30, 40 years ago. Nothing is being written honestly anymore because they're afraid it'll come out through freedom of information. And we're just stymieing our own politicians and our own negotiators.
The INTO leader, Pádraig Tobin, is with us this morning. Pádraig, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your perspective on this?
Well, I thought that the contribution by the phone person there, Peter, who called in earlier, was interesting. Because he was obviously focusing on the fact that there are so many economic challenges currently in the north of Ireland. So we have 300,000 people in poverty in the north of Ireland at the moment. 30,000 food parcels were handed out last year. 11,000 people are homeless currently in the north of Ireland. And these are issues that are facing people every single day in real time. And yet the political establishment in the north of Ireland won't do anything about that. They have allowed for Stormont to remain shuttered. And they come on to radio programs and talk about the fear of the future. There are many people living in fear currently in the north of Ireland that need help economically and socially now. And the politicians have that within their gifts, and they should return to Stormont to make that happen first and foremost. There's no doubt that Brexit is an economic shock, and there's no doubt that it will rupture supply chains. Businesses, by their very nature, like the path of least resistance. And Brexit will create barriers, it will create changes in tariffs and regulations, and that will create resistance. Now, you know, I listen to a lot of the rhetoric on the radio and the television, and to be honest, some of it is OTT. I think that Britain itself will be able to deal with some of these economic shocks that it receives, that the sun will rise for Britain, and it'll probably find itself in a different economic situation in a couple of years' time. The problem I have, though, is that the north of Ireland is particularly exposed to this. So in other words, the structure of the economy in the north is around SME and agri-food sector, and many of it is in the border region. And as a result, it's definitely going to suffer more from this economic shock that Brexit will cause than London or any other part of Britain will. There's about 9,700 businesses in the north, and about 8,700 of those are small operations that rely on cross-border trade. And these have to have difficulties if there is a hard border. And what AIM2 are saying very clearly in this is
The British government are making it clear that they won't be erecting any type of hard border. And Geoffrey Dalton, I heard again on the radio this morning, telling Radio 4, well, look, you know, they're not going to build the border, so who is going to put up this border?
Well, I'll be honest, the European Union will force a border to exist. And the European Union are not going to let the single market have a borderless frontier. And, you know, the governments in the south are talking about, you know, having checks and having them away from the border. But to be honest, if you listen to them on a personal basis and in on a one-to-one, you know, their view is that there will be a border along the border, hard border along the border between the north and the south, if there is a hard Brexit. And if there's a border, it'll create difficulties with regards to trade and enterprise and movement of people. And it'll also be a target, I believe, for many people who want to return to violence. And indeed, we can see the peace process corroding in front of our eyes currently. But the key element here is there is a government in London who have no interest in the north of Ireland, who have no knowledge in the north of Ireland, and yet they're making the rules for the north of Ireland. And we in AIM2 simply say that it would be better if we in Ireland, north and south, simply determined our own future.
Let's have a look in the midst of all of this, Ruth and Patter. In fact, stay there and we'll get the news. We'll be back in just a second. I just want to also ask both you, Ruth, and you, Patter, about this Lord Ashcroft poll it surveyed some just over 1,500 people, and it asked if there were a border poll tomorrow, how would you vote? And what I find fascinating by this is how the numbers start to change as the generational age changes. So over 65-year-olds, this poll suggested that 62% would vote to stay in the UK, 38% for United Ireland. You go down to 45 to 64-year-olds and it's very close. It's 51%. For United Ireland, 49% to stay in the UK. Go down to 25 to 44-year-olds, 55% would want the United Ireland, 45% would want to stay in the UK. And look at this figure for 18 to 24-year-olds, and this is where it gets really fascinating. 60%, Ruth Dudley Edwards, let's start with you, would if they were voting in a border poll tomorrow, would vote for a United Ireland, 40% to remain in the UK. So to summarise that, over 65-year-olds, it changes from 38% voting for a United Ireland for over 65-year-olds and go down to 18 to 24, and that 38% minority, Ruth, changes to 60% for a United Ireland. Is that what unionists are potentially facing in the future?
Well, just ridiculous at the moment, since nobody knows what they're voting for again. I mean, if you don't know what kind of Brexit there's going to be, how can you have an opinion that has any validity? And if you are young, you're believing all the disaster scenarios, because that's what they do, and because they're so pro-EU, and that's affecting everything. And
if you're young and you're so pro-EU,
isn't it true that it's just nationalists and unionists?
Correct.
Polled. So the middle ground hasn't been polled at all.
So, the figures did exclude those who answered don't know or would not vote.
Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, that is completely ridiculous, because they're the people who swing it in the end, one way or the other. But what I really find odd is that people seem to be missing the fact that if Northern Ireland voted for unity tomorrow, they could not rely. I mean, what would happen in the South? It wouldn't vote for it at the moment.
Patter?
To be honest, I'd have to disagree with that. There was a poll carried out by RTE very recently, which actually said that 77% of the population of the South would vote for unity. And actually, it's startling. First of all, these polls are startling. This is the first time that I've ever seen a majority in a poll representative of the North of Ireland state that they want Irish unity. There was a poll carried out in the South which reflected exactly the same. And indeed, 44% of people in the South want a referendum on unity now. And you're absolutely correct in saying that when you look at the age profile is heavily stacked in favour of unity as you get younger. So what that means typically is those people get older, they start to form the majority in the population in total. And what people are realising is that if they keep allowing for the Tories to make rules for the North of Ireland, it has a detrimental negative effect on their economic well-being and their social well-being. So rather than have the Tories make decisions on the North of Ireland and the South of Ireland, let's put the people of Ireland make decisions on the future of Ireland, North and South. Let's determine our own future rather than leaving it to people. You know, we had Dominic Cummings during the week state, and it's quoted as saying that he didn't care if the North of Ireland fell into the sea. We've seen that members of the Tory party were polled recently and asked, what's more important, a hard Brexit or the union between Britain and the North of Ireland? And the majority of the Tory party members stated that actually Brexit is more important to them than the issue of the union. So what I'm saying is that it's important now that the government in the South invite all political opinion, North and South, civic society and political, and that we start to work in a new Ireland forum situation in talking to each other about how do we resolve the challenges that are created by Brexit, and also what kind of Ireland do we want to see North and South
into
the future.
Here's Dan in Lisburn. Morning, Dan.
Oh, how you doing, William? William, sorry, and if I called you, I beg your pardon, William. I beg your pardon, Steve. I have a memory problem, and I'm not trying to insult you in any way by calling you William. I just slip of the tongue and nerves. Right, now, William, Stephen, I actually was on that other program, and that's what's making me do it.
That's right.
Stephen, the United of Ireland, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ireland is a tax haven, as stated by the European Union, right? 10 years ago, Ireland was a financial basket case. And the British government came to its aid. We spent £6 billion bailing out the Irish branch of the Royal Bank of Scotland. We spent £15 billion bailing out the Ulster Bank. That money was a cheque sent over straight into the Irish economy, minus the British economy, plus the Irish economy.
Well, tell me what your point is.
My point is that in the past 28 years, we have bailed out the Irish government to the tune of £28 billion because George Osborne also sent them over £7 billion.
But tell me what your point is in the context of Brexit.
Why would anybody want the United Ireland whenever the United Ireland is debtors to the UK taxpayers, including the taxpayers of Northern Ireland?
Okay, Dan, thank you. And Robert and Carrickfergus. Morning, Robert.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, the Yellowhammer document, now, if it wasn't printed, what the worst case scenario would be, you and other journalists and the media would be going mad. wanting to know why there wasn't one printed.
Well, so we don't know if it was the worst case scenario, by the way. We don't know if it was the worst case scenario because you have a...
That's what everybody seems to be talking about.
Well, not everybody's talking... Hold on, Robert, just one second. So not everybody's saying that because, for example, the journalist from The Times who got the document, all right, who got the leaked document mm-hmm. in the first place, she is saying that the version that she saw, it was not... The heading was not worst case scenario. The heading was base case scenario, right?
Right.
And that she is suggesting that all of a sudden... That heading has been changed to worst-case scenario. So right. Who knows what the real truth is? And just be careful when government describes something that you probe into every single jot and tittle to see what they're actually saying. For example, you heard Arlene Foster on BBC Newsline on the 18th saying it was the Yellowhammer document was an outdated document. Well, factually, she was correct because the document was dated the 2nd of August.
So and you heard Ruth Dudley Edwards turning around and saying that these things would have been done long ago and through different civil servants and members of parliament. So, as you say, you don't know what to believe. But the point I'm trying to make is everybody is on saying about if Brexit's a failure, resign. I want to know, as the same politicians, if it turns out that Britain, Northern Ireland and all turn out to be more prosperous, are them same politicians that's calling for everybody else to resign now, the Brexiteers, are they going to resign, the Remainers going to resign? And I heard Brann saying about he would be willing, he'd never protest it, but he'd be willing to go out and protest. Well, why has he not been protesting the last few years at a party where in an area where he lives, who are keeping the government are from Northern Ireland working, they won't take up their seats to represent people from Northern Ireland. They're meant to represent the whole of Northern Ireland.
Sinn Féin you're talking about.
They won't go to Westminster to represent the people of Northern Ireland. So if nationalists really are concerned about everything, then what they should do is vote SDLP and we would have government up tomorrow. Don't vote for parties that's not going to represent you in government. Vote for ones that will.
I see a press release released by the Food and Drink Federation this morning in response to this Yellowhammer document. And they say it is, as the Food and Drink Federation have been saying for the best part of 2 years now, it lays bare the grisly crisis facing the UK's food and drink supply chain in a no-deal Brexit scenario. And shoppers have rightly come to expect a wide range of products on supermarket shelves. In a no-deal Brexit scenario, there would be significant and adverse changes to product availability and random shortages. Tim McCain from the advertising industry contacted us this morning. Morning to you, Tim.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Morning. Go ahead, Tim.
No, I just wanted to hopefully add to the debate with a little bit of clarification. We constantly hear about no deal at whatever stage that might happen, whether it might be the 31st of October. But I think we need to realise that there isn't really such a thing as no deal. There's only the start of the process of creating new deals. And we need to be wary of that, because those who seem to think that, or are under the impression that no deal is the end of it, it isn't actually the case. And this was put forward by Leo Varadkar last week. But we have to be very clear about this. We need to then start making deals. So if we leave with no deal on the 31st of October, we then need to start negotiating with Europe all over again. We need to start negotiating with the rest of the world to create deals. And Brexit and the outcomes of Brexit will be on our agenda for the news for the next 3 to 4 years. But also the downside of it, and it is a downside, is that Britain will be in a weak position when they go to those negotiations because of the need to create deals. In any business environment or any negotiation environment, the two sides...
And the EU will want to create deals with us as well, as you know.
They will then be put in a position whereby, one, they'll be irritated and annoyed, and secondly, they'll be in the powerful position because there are 27 countries who can support each other and have the financial wherewithal to support each other versus one. And that's like a Fiat 500 driving towards a big truck. And yes, they will want to do a deal, but the idea that they're going to be pressured into doing a deal that is much better than the one at the moment is, as I think it's a misunderstanding of the situation. Because on the agenda, the Irish border issue is not going to go away. It's still going to be on the agenda for any future deal that is made, because it causes a lot of problems about regulations, about tariffs, etc. We then go and try and make deals elsewhere. Say we go to Japan, or we go to Australia, or we go to India, and they say, OK, we want to do a deal with you and you want to do a deal with us. But they're starting with the position that the UK is desperate for deals because there are tariffs that have been created with their largest market. So I'm not necessarily being pro or anti at the moment, although you know from my previous experience, I would be a Remainer. But I think we have to be wary that the idea that no deal is going to be the end of this, when in actual fact it's going to be the beginning of a very, very difficult period for any government, whether it be Labour, Conservative, Remain or Leave.
Tim, thank you. To the Lord Ashcroft poll now, Fran, North Belfast. Morning, Fran.
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen, we're a tiny wee bit jet-lagged. I'm just back from Syria. I was at a four-day conference. But the point I'd like to make is specifically relating to the young people that you have on the poll. I mean, the young people are the future. Stephen, they're the future of any country. They're the lifeblood going forward. If the younger people are, you know, showing the...
You'll understand why I'll say there's nothing scientific about these polls, that this is one poll. Sometimes polls differ at different times can differ.
Yes.
But this Lord Ashcroft poll, it surveyed just over 1,500 people online. It did not ask those. The figures do not include those who answered don't know or would not vote. But the question was asked, if there were a border poll tomorrow, how would you vote? And while over 65-year-olds, the vast majority said that they wanted to stay in the UK, 62%, that falls off a cliff from 62% to 40%. Forget about the over 65s then. It falls off a cliff if you're 18 to 24. It's only 40% want to stay in the UK, 60% want the United Ireland.
Yes, thank you for reframing that. Yes, I think it's very important that if you change the question, you're going to change the results. But the question as it stands, I feel that with the people who voted against Brexit in the north of Ireland, if you couple that to the young people who see their future within the EU going forward, I think if the question was reframed, would you vote for national reunification on the island of Ireland within the EU? Because obviously, if there's reunification, you couldn't have the north out of the EU and the south in, I would imagine, in the short term, because it would just create too much of a problem. So if the question was Irish reunification within the EU, I think you would see your scientific poll of 1,500 people. I think even if you went back to those same 1,500 people, I think that would rise closer and somewhere between the 51% you have now and whatever the percentage was at around 70 or something that voted to remain within the EU.
Okay.
So if that was the question, I think you'd see that rise much higher with the soft unionist base.
Fra, thank you.
For EU.
Thank you. Mark's a taxi driver calling us from Belfast. Morning, Mark.
How you doing, mate? Stephen, last week you had a big day on the threat of violence on the border between the north and south, the Czech meat and milk and cheese and stuff. Has anyone done any investigation into the fact of, if there is a referendum and it goes for unification, what is the threat then in the whole island of Ireland for serious civil unrest and possibly another civil war in this country? Has anybody investigated that at all?
Where are you getting that from? Civil war? Where are you getting that from?
If you're going to steal 50% of the people in Northern Ireland, their country, often, you think they're going to lie down and have their tummies tickled?
Mark, thank you. Jack in Hollywood. Morning, Jack.
Yeah, I wanted to point out to you that Michael Gove dealt with the Yellowhammer document quite extensively in the Select Committee meeting in Parliament last week. It was very well attended, and all the major Remainers were there attacking him, and he gave a huge defence of all that had been done in the meantime to ameliorate the conditions that might come about from a no-deal Brexit. And the no-deal Brexit in the armoury of the government when it's going to negotiate is very, very necessary, because if they don't have that, then they will be at a disadvantage. And the thing that worried me was this discussion would turn, as it has done, to the whole question of a united Ireland and the publication of polls that weren't even comprehensive. And I think people need to be very, very careful about everything they say about Brexit and remaining, and about North and South relationships. and be very, very calm, because there are people who will take advantage of this situation to promote violence. And I really do think that we need a wee bit more rational discussion than you bringing out a Yellowhammer document that has already been dealt with in the House of Commons, in a select committee, in front of all the people who wanted the answers. And the answers were given, right down to the questions of lorries at Dover and how that was going to be sorted out.